There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Dubai Eye 103.8 special.
Broadcasting live from the 2018 Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. For the love of words.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Speaking of which, we have two of them on the sofa with us today. Richard and Judy, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello, thank you.
So for those that Richard and Judy don't need much of an introduction, but I'm going to give them one anyway. So Richard and Judy found fame as Britain's foremost daytime TV duo and have since become the nation's favourite book-loving couple. Now, you had a session earlier this morning, didn't you?
Yeah, we did.
The Festival Book Club. How did that go and who were you talking to?
It was brilliant. We were talking to, well, three people, but only two of the one, I'll tell you about this later, but one of them was on a satellite link because he was in Los Angeles. But the two people who were present with us was a wonderful Kate Moss, whose books, you know, her Languedoc trilogy, all about medieval life in the southwest of France, the Carcassonne, are just fantastic. And who we actually interviewed her and put her on our book club list with her first one, which was Labyrinth. And, you know, since then, she has become one of the most extraordinary authors we have ever had. Also, we had Shari LaPena, who is a Canadian writer who wrote... She was a very literary writer, but she got fed up and suddenly decided she wanted to write a thriller. So she sat it down to start her first thriller, and it turned out to be The Couple Next Door, which was a huge, fantastic success, absolutely huge. You tell them, Richard, about Kevin Kwan.
Kevin Kwan has written a trilogy of books about the uber rich in Singapore and in emerging China. He was born in Singapore, he was brought up there as a child, and then his parents moved to America. And a kind of a light bulb went on in his head about 5 years ago when he suddenly thought that his memories of life in Singapore, which is a unique place, an extraordinary place. I mean, it's built a bit like Shanghai on the basis of British architecture. Apparently, if you go to Shanghai, I've never been to Shanghai, but if you go to Shanghai, it looks like Liverpool. It's not dissimilar in Singapore. So it's an extraordinary place to write about and to describe. And of course, what's happened, I mean, Singapore's always been an enclave of the wealthy, but what's happened is super wealth has come to Singapore, super wealth is now coming to China, and we're all fascinated by wealth. And he's written this trilogy of books, really, and it's ironic and very funny, but it's really about what it's like to be a very rich Asian. And as he himself has now become because of the success of the
book. The irony.
Exactly, yeah. The irony. What I thought worked with the session today, and this is the feedback we got afterwards from the audience that we had, and it was kind of standing room only, I'm glad to say, was that we all learned, including us as writers, we learned actually a lot more about what it is to write a novel, what it takes out of you, the obstacles you have to overcome, how to get started. I mean, I was saying that I started my fourth novel about a month ago, finally, having procrastinated and procrastinated and made excuses, and I finally set a date and I said, I'm starting this morning, I'm doing it this morning. I went to the kitchen and I put the laptop on and it was all ready to go. And what did I do? I went to the corner shop and got tea bags. And then I came back and then I mopped the floor.
It's the way of the author, isn't it?
Absolutely. Somebody once said the only time the oven gets cleaned in our house is when I'm writing a novel. You know?
Absolutely.
And it reminded me actually of that wonderful cartoon in Private Eye years ago. It's a kind of a three-frame cartoon, and it's two blokes sitting on a park bench in their suits eating their lunch. And one guy says to the other, fancy bumping into you here, Bob. It's been years. I'd love to see you. What are you doing these days? And the second frame shows the other guy saying, well, I'm writing a novel. And then the third frame shows the other guy saying, yeah, I'm not also. And that's
true,
how it is.
It?
It's true. A lot of writing novels is actually not writing novels. And we discussed that a lot today. It was good fun.
Yeah, it was a great session. I was in it. And there were some really interesting bits. I love the bit you were talking about, Judy, was talking about how as an author, you have a certain amount of control. And so you like to ignore that voice that tells you can't do things because it's your book. And I think you teasingly referred to it as the God complex.
The God complex.
But it was a nice thought, and I like that idea.
Well, I mean, I'm not the most confident of writers, and when ideas occur to me which seem slightly kind of, which are kind of totally spontaneous and I suddenly think, well, should I do this? Can I do this? Does it fit in with the rest of it? People will think, no, he'd never do that, she'd never do that, whatever, whatever. And then you suddenly realise, actually, I sell it.
Power.
Because it's my book, and I can write what I like. And
it's interesting.
It's wonderful.
That you say you're not confident, because there was a group of people this morning just talking about your latest book and how they, but at least three quarters were saying it made them cry, it had moved them. And so I think perhaps being a people person the way you are, you worry more perhaps about what people think than other authors may, because I think you don't need to worry at all. People seem to love what you've written.
Well, it's very kind. It's very kind. Yeah, I mean, I enjoy writing when it's going well. But I've got to have characters that I love and that I care about, and I've got to have a story that I care about. That's why I was saying to Sherry Le Penne today in our session that she turned into being a thriller writer. I could never write a thriller, I don't think, because it's too kind of pacey and full of plot twists and turns, and not to mention horrible, frightening and scary. So, I mean, I think for me, I can only write when I find a character. The first thing that is in my head when I start writing is I need to find a character that I really like and relate to. And I need to surround this person, it's usually a woman, in fact, let's be honest, it's always a woman, with characters who I know instinctively how she relates to them, whether it's her children, whether it's her husband, whether it's her best friend, whatever. And once I've got that and a sort of idea for the beginning of the book, I'm okay, I'm off.
That's kind of similar to what Alexander McCall Smith was saying. He was saying he finds it really hard to write villainous characters because he wants to love the people that he's writing
about. That's right.
And that's what's fascinating about the difference between you two, both of your styles, because while yours is kind of mystical and beautiful and emotional, you're a bit of a psychopathic writer, aren't you?
I am fascinated by psychopaths. Psychopaths are they're these human beings who live in an extreme corner of the human zoo, you know.
Yes.
They're not like us, and yet they are, because we can kind of empathize a little bit with their frame of mind, which is to have no sympathy with anyone. And we've all been in that position where we've felt we ought to have empathy and sympathy in a given situation,
and
it's missing. We don't have it. Psychopaths are like that all the time, and yet they're very good at hiding it. And I only discovered that when I wrote my first novel, Someday I'll Find You, when I wrote basically about a psychopathic Spitfire pilot. And what happens to him after the war when he ends up in the south of France, and how he slowly but surely, we all learn as we grow, don't we? And psychopaths do too. And psychopaths slowly but surely learn that they're capable of stuff that the rest of us aren't.
And getting away with anything.
And that puts them at an advantage. And they learn that. And my character in that first book, who's so long ago I can't even remember his name now, James, I think, he learns that. And he turns eventually into a smooth-talking, good-looking monster.
And
suffers the fate that he should in the end, I'm glad to say. But yes, I think psychopaths are fascinating to write about, and there's one in the new book I'm writing at the moment.
Excellent. I think people are intrigued as well because it's such a contrast with your kind of persona that everybody knows, this kind of jovial, upbeat.
That's your psychopath
suddenly,
for
exactly,
you.
Exactly. Hidden in the depths.
Very
slightly worried now.
Very good at hiding it. Yeah.
Did it worry you when you first read it, Judy?
No, not at all. I mean, it's good that we're so different. It's good that because we're both writing and beat. Appalling if we were both sort of writing in the same genre. If I was writing about psychopathic,
it would be the competition.
Killers.
It would be terrible.
Exactly, we'd be sort of having these. Well, my psychopathic killer is much more frightening than your psychopathic killer. But we're completely different. We write in a totally different way.
That difference. How does that work with choosing the books for the book club?
It works to a huge advantage actually, because it means that we get diversity. I know it's the buzzword of the moment, the zeitgeist word. But, it gives us diversity. And we were saying in the session this morning, most of the time, Judy and I enjoy reading the same books, you know, across a wide, wide range of genres. But there are areas that we don't really agree on. For example, Judy might read a piece of romantic fiction that leaves me a bit cold or a little bit...
It's the male-female thing.
Yeah,
it really is strong
thing.
In books.
Yeah. But we've learnt, well, we would have done this anyway, but we've learnt through the book club to trust each other's judgment. So if there's, say, for example, a book which is fundamentally romantic fiction that I don't really like, but Judy thinks is fantastic and she can't put down, and she thinks should go on the list, that we should take it from the long list and put it on our short list of 8, soon to be 6, 4 times a year, I'll trust her judgment. And similarly, Judy's not that, you know, worked up about books that maybe have war as their theme or the Second World War as their theme, but I am if they're well written.
If they're good, yeah.
And if Judy isn't too keen on that book, but I'm jumping up and down and saying this is brilliant of its genre, she'll accept that. And so we allow each other the latitude to trespass, as it were. And it seems to work.
I've heard you both say in a different environment that one of the things you're most proud of is the book club, more so than almost what you've done yourself,
yeah.
Which is such a you know, a nice attitude to have. And why is that?
Well, I mean, the late, great Terry Wogan once said that all TV is just footprints in the sand. And he was absolutely right to say it. I mean, you know, it comes and it goes and it fades. Books are different, I think, personally. Books are strong and solid and they stay the course. And when we started out, well, we both started out in news. We both started out as news reporters. And then we got this amazing lucky break to do This Morning back in 1988, all those years ago. We tried very hard to convince our then employers that we would like to have a book club. We were influenced partly, to be honest, by Oprah Winfrey, who had a very... Hugely successful, and still does, has a hugely successful book club. And yet, you know, she had a very similar audience to ours. It was a sort of, it wasn't an erudite, incredibly academic audience, an intellectual audience. It was an audience of people who just, you know, enjoyed reading and wanted to have a good read.
Yes.
So when we tried to convince our then ITV bosses that this could work on ITV at our morning show, they said no, blankly. They said no, nobody's interested. None of your viewers are remotely interested in talking about books. You know, the ratings will go...
So wrong, isn't it? It's such
ridiculous.
A strange view.
And it's a strange view of the daytime audience. Like, they put book shows, television book shows, they put them on at 11 o'clock at night when they thought sort of intellectuals might be watching.
I know, it's
where
so,
the rest of us were all in
arrogance,
bed.
Isn't it? Yes.
It's ridiculous. And the number of times I heard about our audience, why they wouldn't be interested in books, was like, oh, God, you know... Your audience there are students who are half asleep.
That was me. Back in.
I know. But students are bright and interested and want to be kind of, want to be involved. And also, then employed, fine. And also, housewives. And the thing that stuck in my mind with absolute fury every time journalists said it was, oh, your audience are bored housewives. They don't want to read. I mean, how... disgustingly snobbish and stupid is that? And I knew it was wrong. I'm a huge reader. I always have been. So eventually, when we moved on to Channel 4, we managed to get our book club, and it was an immense and immediate success.
Yes, I remember.
To say. And it gave us enormous pride because it showed that our audience were actually hugely interested in reading, hugely interested in literature, and actually also hugely clever.
It was huge validation. I remember the first book that we reviewed on the show was Star of the Sea by Joseph O'Connor.
Yeah.
Wonderful book. And we had two celebrities to review it. One was Bob Geldof. And Bob said in his opening sentence, this man is the new Charles Dickens, which has been said before, obviously, but
yep.
it has a resonance. And for Bob to say it and not to say the F word in the same sentence was interesting. And we had a good discussion about the book, and we obviously had an interview with the author and stuff, and we had a real book club somewhere in the north of England who'd read it, who'd loved it. We gave it a good push because it deserved it. It was a wonderful piece of writing. And we got a call about 3 days later from the publishers saying, can we please have another of your books on your show? Because sales had gone up literally, and I'm not exaggerating, 1,000%. And, you know, it was a Channel 4 show, so it wasn't sort of peak time BBC One ITV. It was Channel 4 with about 2.5 million viewers. And yet it propelled the book to the top of the charts. And that's what's called overnight success.
It does have an incredible impact. Both Kate and...
Kate Moss.
Sherry.
Kate and Sherry. They were both saying what a huge impact you'd had on their lives and the way it had changed their writing. And they're both massive successes.
They're huge. And they're so talented. And it makes us feel... quite, you know, really quite humble, but it's wonderful to be able to do it because, to be honest, you know, people do want to be guided towards good books. And our big thing is that, you know, the books we choose, and God knows Kate Moss is a wonderful, wonderful author, very historical, very
academic, but
she's a brilliant, you love her characters and you love everything, and everyone's so diverse. But I really, really am proud of being able to introduce people who wouldn't know, who would go into a huge bookshop.
There's,
you know,
so much choice, isn't there?
So
I think that puts
choice.
Some people off reading because you can't choose.
What? So if people that they trust, and they trust us only because we've been on telly forever, you know, they can't. No, it's true. They've grown up with us, and they know that we're not...
But also they know how much you've read. That's the thing. Yes. So they know that you've got such experience that they can trust.
But what's interesting is, and I know you've got to go to a break, so very quickly, the book club became a success through television. It was what's called a hammocking exercise. We didn't do a whole show on books. We just did an item once a week within a show with other items about books, and it took off, and it established us as being, you know, involved in literature. And then we launched it when we left Channel 4 on the high street. No TV show, no media launch.
There's a podcast, isn't there?
There is a podcast, yeah, but it's not the same. You know, it's basically a high street thing with W.H. Smith. And it's even more successful now. You don't need the television because it's got a life of its own. And I think possibly for that reason, it's one of the proudest things we've done. Because in some ways, it's quite easy to do stuff on telly. But to make a success off the telly of this kind is... it's quality, isn't it? I mean, yes. To be actually involved in good writing is... as Judy said, it's a humbling experience.
You had the session earlier with Shari, Kate and Kevin Kwan via live video link. And what I wanted to ask you was, they're all equally successful, but they're all very, very different writers. Mm. And one of the things that you're very good at is picking a bestseller. Mm. And what do you think it is about a book? What is it that draws you in and makes you say, right, that one's going to sell?
It's not complicated at all. It really isn't. I mean, everybody wants to make it into a complicated science, and it's not. If it was, we couldn't do it. But we have done it since 2004, so therefore... must be easy. And it's as simple as this. It's just got to be a rattling good read. We're talking here, we're not talking about academic fiction, we're not talking about abstruse writing, we're talking about popular, well-written novels, mostly novels. We do have a few factual books in. And we all know what good writing is, don't we? We recognise it. And we, you know, we like a good well-turned sentence. We like a well-turned plot. We like believable dialogue. And we don't like it when it's not believable and when it's badly written. And we can all spot that a mile off. We just feel it in our gut. So when we read the books that are submitted for a particular tranche of the Richard and Judy Book Club, it's easy. Are we enjoying reading them? Yes, we are. No, we're not. Immediately, you've got your piles of probables and your piles of no way. And so long as the book entertains and informs, I suppose, a horrible BBC expression, us, and engages us, then it's our experience, because we've sort of been immersed in our audience since 1988, since we launched this morning. It'll probably interest them too. We feel a strong affinity with our audience, our readership, however you want to put it, and we feel that they can trust our judgment, because frankly it's their judgment too. So we're all on the same page, we just happen to get to the books first and pick them. But it's not difficult. And usually after 30 pages you know if you've got a good book on your hands or not, and certainly after the first 100. And in our opinion, successful best-selling literature has to work from the word go, from page one. And you think that even things like the front cover are important?
Well, they are in a technical sense. I mean, we do find that a lot of the books which are submitted to our book club, we really enjoy, but the front cover is terrible. But, you know, you don't want it. You look at it and you think, oh, I'm not interested in that. Front covers are really... I mean, this is nothing to do with the writing. It's to do with the graphic artist and the publisher, who needs to distill the essence of this book in a front
image,
cover,
yes,
which grabs you and makes you want to pick it up. Actually, they call it, you know, the pick-it-up factor. You can't go into a bookshop where there are literally thousands of titles and be faced with a sea of grey, you know, like cigarette packet advertising,
yes,
or something. So it's really important, and that's nothing to do with the writing, but but it's a technical thing. But yeah, Richard's right. We want our books to kind of really interest people from the word go. And I think because we've been doing it for so long and we've read so many books and we read so many books in different genres, you know, we don't just stick to one particular kind of book. We read right across the spectrum, that we know right across the spectrum what is good and what, you know, and what works.
Did it help you when you were writing your own books, having, you know, having had that experience picking out what you thought was going to sell well?
Definitely. It's not just reading the books in the book club, it's reading anyway.
Yeah.
I don't think you can actually write properly unless you're a reader. You have to, you know, and you read, and all the time I'm reading books and I'm thinking, oh, that's really clever. Look at the way she or he has done that. That's really, really clever. You don't plagiarize it, but it goes into your brain and you think, yeah, that's a good idea, you know. And you also realize what doesn't work if you're reading books that you don't think are particularly brilliant. clunky language, something you're really annoyed with. You read a book that you're not really enjoying. You know it's not going to make it. And you look at it and you think, if I were your editor, if I were your publishing editor, I could tell you how to turn that around.
That's interesting. But so that, you can fix things quickly now.
Well, yeah, but we're not. But that's only because we've read so much. Yes.
I call it the racing driver analogy. It's a bit like if you stuck me in a Formula One car now and put me on the circuit at Monaco and said, right, you know, beat the track record. You must be joking. I'd come off at the first corner. But if you sat me in a dual control car, and I sat with a really good Formula One racing driver and went around the track again and again and again and again and again, I'd start to pick up how to do it.
It's the 10,000 hours effect, isn't it? Is that what they call it?
Something like
that. I can't remember.
Exactly. And then if you put me in the car seat, I could probably do a reasonable circuit. So reading, if you're going to write, is critical because you learn so much from other people's triumphs and their failures. You learn such a great deal. As Judy said, it's not plagiarism, but it is a steep learning curve. And I would say for anybody who is listening who thinks that they want to write a novel, make sure you read a lot first. You know.
Do you think it's important to read in the genre you want to write in, or do you think you can actually pick up more sometimes from a completely different genre?
That's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that, actually.
I don't think it matters. I think that to read is the power of reading and what it does to your mind and your imagination is to be adventurous and to try things that you're not entirely sure that you're going to like. And I think in terms of the genre that you want to write in, I mean, I love, for example, I do love thrillers. I do love detective fiction and thrillers. I could not ever write a detective thriller in my life. I mean, I couldn't do it. I don't have the interest or the skills, but I love reading them. And they obviously turn something in my brain, which inspires me in some ways when, you know, when you're thinking of sort of turning a plot, when you kind of release information, when you put a spin on things, even though the book you're writing is not a detective thriller. It's just a wonderful smorgasbord of inspiration. It really is.
Thank you so much, Richard and Judy. We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you for joining us at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature and on Talking of Books today.
You're listening to Talking of Books.
Broadcasting live from the 2018 Emirates Airline.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.